podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by The Real Flower Company, for all of your luxury flower needs.
It's the Pompey Pubcast that combines the beers and the blues.
Barros for Pompey, round Cusack goes down, penalty to Potts with an old Trafford. Barros tripped by Thomas Cusack, who sent off Montari do the job. He steps up, left footed, scores for Pompey. They lead at Old Trafford in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup.
Jamal Lowe's onside, the flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Portsmouth Football Club are promoted to League One.
Curtis across the face, a goal. Marquez! He's won it! 96 minutes on the clock! Carter the heading back to Wembley!
This is Three Lads in the Pub.
Welcome along then to Three Lads in the Pub, episode 18, and a bit of a different one. This week we are on Twitter Spaces with a live audience, which is always good fun. Big shout out to everyone that's tuned in to us. We've had a couple of weeks off. We are back. Obviously, there was a break of no games, and then obviously last week there was a game, but not until after we recorded the podcast. So that's why we had another week off. But joined as ever by the two guys that do this podcast with me, Jeff Harris and Ryan Stillwell. Good evening to both of you.
Hello, mate.
Bit of a different one tonight, lads, but good to be doing it. Yeah, I have to apologise. It's partly my fault. Well, it is my fault. Obviously, I do all the technical side of this podcast. So, obviously, I'm not in town, so we couldn't be together tonight. But at least we've got something to shout and rant about. Because, I mean, going to be brutally honest, I'll come to you first, Jeff. It has been
crap.
Well, I mean, same old. I mean, we've been saying this for weeks on end. And people think we're just moaning old bastards by moaning all the time. But it is. We've been saying this for weeks, and now people are starting to finally see it. And we've had a mediocre week again. And people are starting to wake up and smell the coffee. It's just been shocking.
You know, just go back to the last episode we'd done before the break, and we said we know how bad Pompey have been in the striking department in the previous games just going up to that break, and we talked about this. Hope it doesn't, the break doesn't affect our performance. You know, we said we think it was going to hinder the Blues and their striking department, and it has. You know, for all the efforts we have, we just lack that. We've lacked that cutting edge in the last two games. Yeah, we're a bit fortuitous against Bolton. However, yesterday was so lacklustre and just pedestrian. You know, I saw the team sheet and I just rolled my eyes. And I know people think we have a go at Tyler Walker just because of having a go at him. But I honestly do not see what he brings to this team.
Absolutely nothing.
I really don't get it. You know, I've seen Neil Allen saying that he's been, you know, disappointing, and that's putting it mildly. From what we've been told and has been alluded to in terms of wages for Walker, you know, Andy Cullen said in the interview that we've done with him, two or three high-earned players were shown out the door to bring Tyler Walker in. And I'm sorry, that for the players Cowley has got right in bringing in on loans or some short term deals, he has got quite a few wrong as well. And you know, I get why he brought him in. He banged goals in for fun when he was at Lincoln under the Cowleys, but it just hasn't happened for him at Pompey, has it? Let's be honest. And I don't want to make players the scapegoat. I think that's wrong, but he just can't start any more games. He's had enough opportunities.
I think I had the same reaction. I think many others probably did as well. Obviously, there were some people that were just, you know, getting on with it. But when I saw his name on the team sheet, I just thought, why? What is the point? But then I thought, hold on. We've been saying we've got nothing to play for a couple of weeks. So is that the same attitude Cowley's having? Although he did say he's still hopeful. But let's be honest.
There's hopeful and there's hope between no hope and Bob Hope, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, I hope that I can fit into a small bloody t-shirt, but that's never going to happen, But Ryan Stillwell, or the Viking, what's your take on everything we've said so far?
In terms of the week we've had after a 17-day break, I found the 17-day break quite cathartic because there's been a lot going on this season on the field, off the field. For myself personally, I essentially became a father at the start of the season, so I've been going through the season with a newborn. Obviously, other off the field stuff happened, transitioning in between how I do games. Obviously, the season itself has been underwhelming. There's been streaky moments. I think Sean Raggett listens to us on a weekly basis, by the way, because he used the word streaky yesterday in his post-match interview, which is something I've been calling us for about half a year now.
Used the word poison.
He did.
Chalice.
Well, you also used the words used to be on the radio, which is your mantra, Liam, so...
Never said that.
But
just one episode. Just one episode.
Circling back to the point, 17-day break. It was good to not have to think about Pompey for a while. I think everyone took some time away to enjoy something else, just to take the minds off things. And then in the space of 5 days proceeding from the Bolton game, God, we cannot wait for the season to end already. We had a 17-day break, and then within 5 days, everything's gone wrong. This has been an absolutely turgid week in terms of the way performances have devolved through the course of 90 minutes, the articles that have come out in the middle of the week, certain incidents during the week. It is impressive how this club can give you a 17-day break from thinking about it, and within 5 days going, it's us, we're back, we're here to annoy you again. And you just go back to feeling the same melancholic malaise as you did before the break. I had a wry chuckle on the way home from Cheltenham yesterday because I thought, for all of this, I just want the season to end. We just can't seem to get out of our own way right now in terms of making bad news for ourselves as a club. And I think everyone listening's got their own story of the week in terms of what they feel is the worst thing that's happened this week. And that's when you know it's a bad week for the club, is that everyone's probably got a different angle on what the worst part of it was. So it's been a horrible few days for the club. There's been nothing positive coming out, and we've still got to meander through some difficult games before the end of the season, before we can actually just take a breather for a bit.
Yeah, let's dissect the games then, boys, starting with obviously the bloody hell, who decided that on a Tuesday night? I know it was rescheduled. Tuesday night in Bolton, and fair play to the fans, by the way, for making that journey up there, because that was a vital journey, I imagine. I didn't do it because I was doing other bits, but Jeff, obviously, a 1-1 draw, silly penalty to give away in hindsight, probably was a penalty. Our goal, what's your take? What was your take on that? Was it offside for you?
No, it's not offside. Over the course of the season when I've been refereeing, the amount of times I've had to explain that when a player is offside and onside, when the ball is touched by the defender, and if a forward isn't challenging, then he is onside, and football yes, there were three Pompey players in an offside position. If the ball had gone clean through to them, they're offside. Irrespective of whether a defender touches the ball and then he's deliberately played it back, or it's shinned it and it's gone to the Pompey player, they're then technically onside. So for me, it's a legitimate goal. And I spent a few minutes on Tuesday night explaining that one and everything else. And, for anyone who disagreed with me, go and read the rules on offside and what's onside and stuff, because it's there for in black and white, clear as day, what the new rule is. In fact, I had one today when I was refereeing today.
I've seen situations where decisions haven't gone our way. And I mean, on another day, that probably wouldn't have gone our way. But it was nice, Ryan, to see a decision which many disagree with, actually go our way for once, because how many times have we been on the receiving end?
Yeah, and it's something I try to hang on to when I say that every time we get involved in a decision that goes against us, and obviously there's the "we always get crap refs" mantra. It's true. Yeah, no one debates the standard of EFL officiating. But the thing I try to hang on to is at some point we're going to get a call that goes our way, and we are going to get fortunate with one. More often than not, over the course of a 4-6 game season, I like to think these things do even out. And I could name a couple of decisions, instances where it certainly has gone our way when it shouldn't. The one that goes off the top of my head is probably George Hurst in the same game that Joe Morrell got sent off at Oxford. He should have been sent off 3 minutes later. Marcus Hahner should have been given a straight red at Cambridge on the 3rd of January. Somehow avoided that. So there are little moments where we do like to forget that sometimes we do get it in our favour. A lot of people seem to think it was offside, but in the end, we get the goal. And then a slightly fortuitous penalty for Bolton. I think it was fairly innocuous, the challenge that gets them their penalty for the equaliser, but I couldn't really complain about it. If there's contact and it does impede him, then what do you expect? It will be a foul in that case. So over the course of the season, I can't grumble that referees have put us in a worse position than anything else. There's only one place you look to in terms of why we are where we are. So I think I steer away from that one.
Yeah. But the game as a whole, Jeff, just two bang average League One sides at the moment.
Yeah, you know, Bolton are a good run of form. Dion Charles is a player we spoke about before in previous
episodes.
Only we
signed him, eh?
Yeah, if only. And yeah, they've had a great run of form to go from where they were to where they are now. But again, it just seems to be two average League One teams playing out a draw for a game that meant nothing at the end of the day. I mean, you could argue if Bolton won that, their playoff chances are still there. If Pompey had won it, our playoff chances are still there. But they are well and truly sailed down the river now, haven't they? There's no way, although it's mathematically possible, there is no way on earth I think they'll even breach the top eight this season.
I mean, we've summed up the Bolton game. There's not really much to shout about. It was a point on the road. I mean, we would have probably taken that before kickoff. But then you move on to Saturday, Ryan, which is, you know, on the pitch, there was obviously stuff to talk about, and we'll talk about the off the pitch stuff in a bit as well. But yeah, sum up Saturday for us.
From the moment I entered the stadium Saturday, every single person in there, and that's including fans, players, staff, press, stewards, not a single person in that stadium felt like they wanted to be there. It was almost like an obligation to be there more than anything. I got into the ground, having had a drink at the bar next door, watched the Everton game, and I got here and thought, right, let's just get through this 90 minutes. We can go home and, you know, and then after that we can call it a day. Simple 2-hour drive home, and I can do something else with my Saturday. Of course, I went anyway because I'm a daft Pompey fan who decided to go, but no one.
Glory
on that in a bit. It just didn't have the feel of anyone wanting to be there. And the game is a tawdry procession of errors and disorganization from both sides. We seem to be playing two different systems at once during the first half before we decided to play no system at all in the second half. The two systems we tried to employ in the first half were we would often get the ball into the feet of Hayden Carter just outside our box, and then we've got five players pushing the back line of Cheltenham. So in the first half, there were times where we were playing a 4-1-5 and we were intending to build from the back on the deck. Now, Hayden Carter had a few instances yesterday of giving the ball away deep in his own half. Passes were being intercepted by multiple players on the edge of the halfway line. That's because we've got too many players far too far up the pitch, not offering for options, yet we're trying to build from the back. It was very disjointed, discombobulated. It didn't look like there was a set plan set in place. All of a sudden, Gavin Bazunu just decides, okay, I'm an international goalkeeper. I could be doing a lot better than this, but you know, I'm going to stand on this mud patch and bail you out anyway. And for the most part, he did. A series of great saves in the first half, second half, before we eventually decided which Dubai hotel our players were booking for their holidays, weren't focusing on the game and deservedly lost. And in terms of boring, in terms of meaningless, in terms of lifeless, yesterday was a grand epitome of all of those things. The final whistle came as a blessed relief to everyone in that stadium. I think even the Cheltenham fans, promotion from League Two, they want a nice, boring, consolidated year in the league to make sure they're not going down. They've done a very good job of that. They were never really involved in a battle. They'll go home content. Us, on the other hand, I was just happy it was over. It really was just a pointless day.
And I'm not sure, obviously, sorry if I've spoiled this for later on, Ryan. I've been dealing with it. I don't know if this is involved, but obviously, Jeff, you've probably seen the video spiraling of the full-time reaction from the Pompey fans. Well, majority of the Pompey fans. I mean, you know, certain individuals are coming over in a couple of weeks. What's your take on that? Because, I mean, I just think it's going to be sour.
Pompey fans can handle losing if they can see the team out there trying their hardest and leaving nothing left in the tank.
Yeah.
And we can live with that. And you know, there have been times over the years we've applauded Pompey teams coming off the pitch. They've given their all. We can see they've given their all. And we accept, okay, we're beaten by the better team on the day. You look at that result yesterday, you know, what I think it was about, around about 23 minutes. O'Brien had a glorious chance. We broke there. You know, we pressed them. The keeper has a nightmare. The ball goes into the 18-yard box and you think, O'Brien's got it. He's going to smash this home. And I think it was Will Boyle done a last-ditch tackle. And you just thought, how have we missed that? And from that moment on, I was like, we're going to lose this. For all the good chances we had going down our right-hand side, we were overloading them. We had lots of pressure down there, lots of play down there. And I think that's because we effectively end up with three players on the right. You got Romeo bombing on, you had Harness out there, and Tunnicliffe naturally gravitates over to the right-hand side. If you watch his game closely, he would always kind of fill that half space between centre midfield and the winger, and he kind of, sometimes he gets in the way of other players, but it just wasn't to be. And then you go, oh, okay, this is actually crap. Second half performance was dire. There seems to be no idea, no energy, no passion, no endeavour. There was just nothing. It was just 11 players down in tools, running around on a pitch and hoping they'll get a goal. Now, I kind of thought, have the players now written off the season? Like Ryan said, are they booking their hotels out in Dubai? Are they thinking about end of season piss-ups? Are they whatever? I don't really care if they are thinking about hotels, but go out there and give it you all. Give everything you've got to put a performance in. Even if you're having a particularly bad game, you should still go out there and work hard. And you know, because if you can work hard, it gives you something to build off. And there was just nothing. So the fans' reaction at the end, I think, is justified, because the team gave them nothing. How many fans went yesterday? 1,400, something like that. You know, they expect a work hard performance first and foremost. Yeah, you know, they got everything. They got the players at the end, and the management got everything they deserved yesterday.
Yeah.
And if it continues, when certain people come over, I think Fratton Park's going to be toxic. Now, yeah. I put out on social media yesterday, look, I'm prepared to give the Cowleys the free transfer windows, he said. Eric Eisner referenced it in his interview with the club, and he said his words were something like, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, Danny Cowley has said it takes three transfer windows to get the spine of the team correct. Let's just break that down. We've got a centre-half on loan. We've got a right-back on loan. We've got two centre-forwards on loan. We've got a goalkeeper on loan. Tell me what part of the spine we're going to have in place with our own players by the third transfer window, because I don't think we're going to have it.
So feels like a silly thing to say again, doesn't it? Because people have been taking on to that.
It's not the only thing he said wrong thing to say this week. And we'll go into that in a minute. You know, I honestly believe if by the January transfer window next season, if we are not in the top six, Fratton Park is going to be a very toxic place for that management, that team and the owners. If not before then, probably end of November. We've got to have the summer transfer windows of all transfer windows. Now, let's go into Danny Cowley's comment, which was edited by the news. I'm sure the news boys have got a reason why they've changed the article. But originally it said, we have a mid-table budget for next season. We know what we are and we know what we've got. We're going to have a small squad. That has since been edited. Why? Why has it been edited? Now, only the club and only the guys at the news can answer that. But fans read that and fans make up their own opinions, and rightly so. It's not boding well for next season already, is it? When we're talking about you need three transfer windows to have to have your spine, what, we're going to go out and sign three permanent strikers? We're going to go out and is Alex Bass the number one goalkeeper next season? Or are we going to try and get Bazunu? Because I don't think he'll be back next season. I've got no answers for it at the moment. And I just think there's one or two comments coming out in the last week or so that are cracks in the story that should be coming out of Fratton Park, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Interesting. So much to talk about tonight, lads.
we've got Andy on. Andy's listening.
Yeah. Hello, Andy. I've just sent him a text. Good evening, Andy. Tell you what, I miss everyone in the press box, but I miss my chats with good old Andy Moon. He's a good lad. Obviously, Ryan, you've been back since, haven't you? Since the days of when we used to be on the.
I had I think it was the Fleetwood game, the home game of Fleetwood, that I was very cordially invited on to do co-commentary with Dan Shaw for QA Hospital Radio. So it was good to see everyone again. It was good to get back in the press box and. What started out as an awful game that day, we at least got something out of in the end.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the agenda for tonight's podcast, and it's so depressing reading it. Alfie Stanley made some comments in the week, which drew a bit of traction, Ryan. And then there obviously was some other. We were talking about this a few weeks ago, weren't we, on our podcast about the academy players? And Alfie Stanley made a very interesting comment. And then obviously we've seen Harvey Bradbury also comment on it as well. So do you want to run us through that and give us your reaction?
Yeah, I actually think that a lot of people are focusing on the wrong thing as the bad takeaway from what Alfie Stanley said. For those who don't know what we're on about, it was an article that he had in the news talking about basically his final couple of months at Pompey, the way it shaked out, the way he ultimately left the club. And initially there was an offer for him to stay, which was also removed before he could actually sign it. A lot of people are focusing on the fact he was offered a £5 wage rise. Now, obviously that's not good optics in itself, but I think that's not actually the worst part of the story. I think it's something that people have not maybe focused on. My perception of it is, I know football is a unique industry, but when you play for a football club, when you work for a football club, you are an employee. So if you take away all the terms from the sport industry and put in employee, the story plays out like this. A young lad working for a company essentially gets axed from the company by a guy he's never met and has never had a proper chance to review him. Said guy who has axed him leaves a couple of weeks later and also doesn't have the front bottle insert term here to actually tell him, get someone else to do it in a dark little cupboard meeting room. So this lad working for this company has been axed rather callously, very close to the end with no prior warning, all of a sudden has to look for a new job and all of a sudden has to keep working at this company in the meantime. His line manager, in other words, Danny Cowley in this case, then tells him, I'm going to put you in the first team, or I'm going to put you in whatever team, for the final few games. Because you remember towards the back end of the league season last year, he was on the bench a lot of the time. And when John Marquess was continually shitting the bed, Alfie Stanley never got a run out for no reason at all. He was just sat on the bench. Now, here's the problem with that. Stanley is a young guy trying to hone his craft, develop his skills to find a new employer. To hone your skills and develop your craft, you need to be playing football. You need to be playing games. In other words, you need to be doing your job. You need to have a chance to do your job. All of a sudden, by being on the first team bench every week, Alfie Stanley is not playing football. He is not playing games. He is not able to put himself in the shop window for anyone else to come look at him and see what he's about. So the club's gone, you're not good enough, and we're getting rid of you. We're also not going to let you play for the last couple of months of the season because you're going to be sat on the bench all of the time. So you're not good enough, and we're not going to let you get any better because we're stopping you from playing games in any prospect for this moment in time. Then the next part of this is his employer comes back to him and says, actually, forget everything we just said. We're going to offer you a £5 raise to stay here. So we don't think you're good enough, but we're going to keep you here anyway because we like wasting money on players we think are good enough, but we think are good enough to stay here. Is anyone confused yet? Stanley thinks this over, being a young lad from Pompey, wants to play for his hometown club, as we probably all do. And when he's got pen to paper, the offer is withdrawn. No reason why, no explanation given, it's withdrawn. So they've offered him a deal. They've then withdrawn the deal as he's actually about to sign the deal, which means for the second time in 2 months, while he's also not playing football at all because he's on the first team bench, Alfie Stanley for the second time has been kicked out of Portsmouth Football Club. What the fuck are we doing to our people? This is not a way you treat your employees. Everyone's focusing on the £5 thing. This is not a way you treat your employees. You're stopping them from playing football, developing their craft for 2 months. You kick them out. You offer them a deal. You kick them out. It doesn't matter if he's good enough or not. It doesn't matter where he's playing right now. It doesn't matter if we believe he's got a future in the game. This is not how you treat people. And this is my takeaway from it. It's not the money that was given. It's not about whether he's good enough or not. But you don't dick around anyone. You shouldn't dick around anyone in any capacity. But this is a football club dicking on one of its own homegrown people that loves this club, that sat in the same Fratton Park seats that we sat in as a season ticket holder. They're halting his development by sticking him on the bench. They're putting offers on the table and then withdrawing them. This is not how you treat people. This is horrific optics. That's my takeaway from it.
You know, we've long surmised that any of those academy players that were coming through that were released, that their wages would come out the first team budget. £205 a week for a player who is still learning their craft, still developing as a, you know, as a human being, is still learning the game and has got a long way to go. Is £205 a week a lot of money in the grand scheme of things when we are reportedly playing quite a lot of money for Tyler Walker?
You have to mention that again. Christ.
You know, Andy Cullen referenced it. Andy Cullen referenced it. Yes, and we don't know what the final figure was, but Andy Cullen did say that two or three players who exited the club in the January window financed a deal for Tyler Walker. What players left in the January window? Ellis Harrison, John Markies, Paul Downing. All would be on significant money.
It's just like selling a Bentley for a bloody Fiat 500, isn't it?
Like, honestly. It's and my, like Ryan says, it's not about the £5 increase. It's about how he was treated. And, you know, you read the article and you know, towards the bottom of the article, it talks about Roberto, whatever his name is, G plus 12, Gilardi. The guy has got a checkered past when it comes to scouting players at other clubs when he was at other clubs anyway. The only player I think he has potentially done well with was spotting Ronan Curtis. All the other players potentially have been crap. And he's making football decisions based on not even seeing a player play.
There'll be a Pompey pub quiz question in a few years about that goalkeeper we signed from across the continent and what his name actually was.
Oh, the amount.
No, not him. Not Duncan Turnbull. The other one.
Oh, the Croatian lad.
Petar Djurin, I believe it was. But in a few that's years' it. Time, he'll be one of those Pompey prospects that is consigned to pub quiz history.
I can already see it now. Andy Moon's writing this down for the quiz for Guy for the next game.
Yeah. There you are. Free content for Solent's trivia day. We provide a service.
I'm going to take back my comments about describing the Tyler Walker situation as selling a Bentley for a Fiat 500, because John Marcus was certainly not a Bentley.
but there you go. Well, okay, so John Marcus was obviously left in the January window, told he had no Pompey future. Is John Marcus any worse than Tyler Walker? Or should I say, is Tyler Walker any better than John Marcus?
I think he's worse.
I think Tyler Walker's worse. I think even a £205 a week Alpha Stanley is better than Tyler Walker. Yeah.
I think it comes down to what you're looking for in a forward. Now, Tyler Walker, we were described to as this instinctive ghosting run maker that gets in behind the channels of the defence, picks up on the through balls, knows where instinctively to be as a goal-scoring forward to then convert. How many of Aidan O'Brien's goals since he's joined have been exactly that? In shorter words, right place, right time. Most of them.
I have a theory on that, Ryan. I think Tyler Walker is so good at ghosting runs that no one sees him.
So basically he plays on a dimension of reality to the rest of our team. But the thing is, if you're that good and it's not working, then at some point you do something else to try and influence the game. Now, how often, and Walker's not just solely guilty of this, there are other players that we can mention, and in fact will mention, that ghost around and don't contribute enough, but Walker does nothing else to influence a game. His only asset is the ghosting runs, is the getting in behind, is the converting of chances. And so far, his only goal, Pompey, was 1 yard out against the worst team in the division.
It's like David Norris playing for
David
England.
Norris. Not David, David Norris. Nugent.
David Nugent. Jermaine Defoe's
Walker,
goal.
Walker's not the only one guilty of that, but when it circles back to him earning a deal, not the case. Just don't see it happening. Yeah. There were other players yesterday. I've even mentioned before that I think at times O'Brien goes anonymous in games, but the things he does when he gets on the ball, a la that 75-yard run against Accrington Stanley, popping at the back post a minute into his Fratton Park debut against Doncaster, there's almost, at times, a Brett Pittman quality to him, not in terms of the way they play, because O'Brien tries to get involved more than Pittman ever did. But when you play O'Brien, sometimes there's the element of he can go missing for quite some time in games, but you're gambling that at some point in the 90 minutes, he does something that changes the entire game. that just changes the momentum of the game, changes the scoreboard. And we have seen that in a few games since he's joined us. Now, he himself has done far more to earn a deal than Walker, whether he's all the way there to earning the deal, up for debate. And it's I've seen online on several channels that people are to-ing and fro-ing on it. But yeah, our forward line right now is in a very bad place heading into the off season, and that's, you know, mirroring last season when Alfie Stanley was on the bench. To go back to our original point of conversation, why not just give him a run out? Let's see what he had. And this is a point that we've been making on this podcast towards the end of this season. Why not play Jay Mingy? Why not develop Denver Hume in the position we bought him to play him as a starter? Why not play Harry Jewett White? Why on earth are we playing a 36-year-old Sean Williams who has no future at this club? Now, that is no disrespect to Sean Williams. He's had a good career, and I'm going to use those words again, father time is taking its toll on him. So it's not his fault he shouldn't be playing, but he shouldn't be playing. We should be looking to next season and developing something about that side. The simple truth of the matter is Sean Williams has no business being in the starting 11 that's looking ahead to next season. Now, I would rather have lost 3-0 at Cheltenham yesterday, having actually tried something, having actually experimented something. I would rather have lost 3-0 at Cheltenham, having seen Hume play, Mingy play, Jewett White play, and tried to make them the focal point somewhat, or at least focus part of the game on them, because then at least you walk away with that from that game knowing something you didn't know before kickoff. But we knew everything we knew about Pompey before and after kickoff yesterday. Nothing surprised me. We didn't try anything. We tottered out the same half bag of a team, and we deservedly lost. It's another 90 minutes for me that we've wasted. And considering the competition that's going to be in this division next year, are we in a place to waste 90 minutes when we certainly don't have the budget to waste?
It was an exercise in squad rotation that backfired. I think the Cowleys thought it would be an easier game. It was an opportunity to rest some players in preparation for Tuesday's game, which is going to be a tough game. They totally got it wrong. They got the tactics wrong. They, as Ryan said, they didn't know what formation we were playing. Was it a 4-4-2? Was it a 4-2-2-2? Was it a 4-2-3-1? 4-1-5. There just seems to be no cohesive formation yesterday, and that lays with Danny Cowley. He has to take the blame for getting it wrong yesterday.
You know, Ryan, on the RADIO, I asked you about Jacket under pressure. You know, with his job, and at the time, I think he said no. Should he be, you know, worried, concerned for his job? I think he said no. Was it you? Or was it Jake? Might have been, I don't know. Anyway,
Jake's
I'm
listening.
Asking that question now. Towards the end of this season, do you think that Cowley's under pressure on his job?
In terms of pressure, do you mean from?
I think he's going to say one back for it.
So I was going to say, do you mean from us, the fans, or from the owners?
Well, from the both.
From the fans, I think we're approaching the crossroads of his time at Pompey. I am starting to see people sway in terms of their general opinion of him and what he can achieve, but the cries of him to go are still fairly minimal from at least the people I interact with and the people I speak to at games. But when it comes to pressure from the owners, pressure from the fans, I do think we are... This summer is the crossroads. If we get off to a poor August and we get off to a poor September to start the season, the consensus of the fan base will turn, because it was there in print for everyone to see how many windows he would be granted to make this side his own. This side this season is actually these days much his own, and there hasn't been much of anything to it. He said a few weeks ago, if I had this squad from the start of the season, things would be different. They would be different, Danny. We'd probably be 12th instead of 11th.
I was going to say
the same. I'm not sure he's under pressure yet. in terms of right now, but this summer will be a pivotal moment in his tenure at Pompey and in terms of what he can bring in and in the early start to next season. I don't see how he has the overall support of the fan base by October if our table position is double digits. I don't see how fans part with another several months of mid-table mediocrity. And I do believe most of our fan base has reconciled with the idea this summer is the big one. Whether or not mid-table but or not, we don't care. You told us three windows. We're giving you three windows. We don't care if the spine of the team is all disappearing in the summer. You laid this on the table for us. We are going to judge you by the standards you set yourselves, because you're the professionals. You're the ones who voluntarily come out to the media saying these things. We don't force you to do it. We don't all show up at the training ground on a Thursday afternoon and make you say these things. These are your own words as a club. So when Cullen says we're giving him three windows, when the owners say we're backing him, when Cowley says we've got a mid-table budget, we're still going to judge you on how you build a team in the third window. This is your time to shine.
Steady, Ryan. We're setting our stall early for next season, aren't we?
I mean, it genuinely could go either way. This is the great unknown about football. This is the great unknown about organised sport. So this is why I'm not forming any conclusions yet in terms of how we will do next season. But I can tell you how the atmosphere of the club will be if we do not look like a competitive team next season. And it's also a PR nightmare. We are currently going through a cost of living crisis in this country. Everything is more expensive now. We're about to enter our sixth season in the third tier of football under the current ownership. And before we've even announced the season ticket prices, we're telling the club we've got a mid-table budget. Who the hell plans this stuff? This is not incentive to get people through the door, an apathetic fan base that is starting to veer towards having had enough of this. And I was there at Cheltenham yesterday. A lot of people have had enough of this. So in terms of incentivizing fans to be at Fratton Park next season, it's April and we've already managed to do a crap job of next season.
The season finishes early this obviously this time around because of the World Cup. That means players can be identified, negotiations, all that should be well and truly on the way with those players, even at other clubs that are coming out of contract. Or are we going to, and I'm going to mention Ryan's favourite player, are we going to have another Scott Twine incident where we identify players, we go, oh yeah, this is what we're going to, oh no, yeah, we can't offer you that, and off you go to MK Dons. We shot ourselves in the foot last season. We are still searching for a director of football operations or director of football, whatever the club want to call it. I do not want the club at any stage of next season to use that as an excuse as to why we haven't signed quality players or the right players in the summer transfer window.
Just to briefly interject there, Jeff, you mentioned, of course, my favourite player and the person I wept in the shower when we bailed on signing him. I really did, because I just knew he was going to make it. Now, I know that Milton Keynes have not been around for a very long time. I believe this is their 18th season. But with six games to go, which is still a fair amount of football to play, Scott Twine has the single highest goals and assists record in a single season for MK Dons ever. This is his first season. He's 22. And in terms of single season records, he has been involved in more goals and assists in a single season than any Dons player ever. He's already doing stuff that's not been done in almost two decades in his first season there. And he's 22. And they've sauntered right past us and are going to the championship. He was that he was that goddamn good, and we let him go.
Yeah, we're hearing the same story being told again, or not being told, coming out. We want quality over quantity. Okay, well, where did that get us this season? I'm waiting for we want to sign players who play international football because it gives players a break. Well, where has that got us now? Because now you're complaining about Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday for the next, what, six games, seven games? The management of Pompey have created this situation. The management of Pompey need to own this situation now and take responsibility for the situation, because they're coming out and blaming the FA about fixtures, and they're blaming the FA about this and that and the other. You done this. You decided you wanted a small squad. You've come out and said you want quality over quantity. You've come out and said this is what... Why is it everyone else's fault?
It's quite interesting that... I can't remember which specific game it was before the 17-day break. It formed part of my din of the week rant that everyone seemed to love about Cowley saying we're a short squad and the scheduling's ridiculous. So, and as we pointed out, well, you made this squad. You're the one that chose a small squad. Yesterday, in his post-match presser at Cheltenham, he said, we know the rules. This is League One. We know the rules. You play Saturday and you play Tuesday and you play Saturday. What happened in that 17 break that illuminated you to what you were previously oblivious? Why the sudden change of why the sudden reconciliation? I knew this a year ago. In fact, I knew this pretty much growing up as a football fan, that you play more games down here than you do in the Premier League, and weather might be crap in winter. All these things. I found it weird for him to admit that we know the rules about League One. You play Saturday, Tuesday. We should have known that a while ago, to be honest. My sympathy with the small squad ran out the moment you signed it.
Lads, we're going to move on to you just referenced it, Dublin Din of the Week, Ryan, which is brought to you, of course, by Lumberjack Supps. Cheers to Matt for sponsoring that. Check them out, lumberjacksupps.com. This week, I was honestly driving back from, just like I was saying before we started the recording, I was driving back from Cardiff this afternoon. I'm now in Bristol, sat in a hotel room, as you do. And I was thinking, this is going to be a tough one, both for both. Maybe not so much Dub. I've got a great Dub, which I'm hoping you've gone for, but we'll find out in a second. But the Din could be various contenders today.
I'm going to do some retrospective Dub Dinning first. So last week when we didn't have a podcast, Din of the Week goes to Stan Collymore, who all of a sudden started deep-throating Derby. And then every Pompey fan started going, were these not your comments about Pompey saying they deserve to be crunched and folded? And he went, wow, yeah, well, that's different, isn't it? Wow, yeah. Shut up. And then he starts blocking people. He starts backtracking on his old comments. Yeah. Poor one for him. The Dub of the Week for last week, I give to Pompey women's side. They beat Bournemouth in the Hampshire Cup. Obviously, the final should be null and void because Bournemouth is notorious for not being in Hampshire. But there we go, Jeff. Congratulations on the Pompey women for getting a good trophy win to add to their collection.
Could I chuck another one in last week as well? We tweeted about the lad Alfie that had Alfie Norman, who had our logo on his top for his fight, and he won his fight. So well done, Alfie. He came and saw me at Astoria. A couple of days after, and asked, told me he's got to get dubbed for that, surely. But yeah, he's a definite contender. Well done, Alfie.
Yeah.
And on your kit, mate. Well done.
So so that's Dub and Din for last week. Well done to the Pompey women, and I believe they've got.
I can't wait for this.
They've got an all important game at St Mary's coming up soon against that lot. So that'll be an interesting one for anyone who decides to travel. I'm still weighing it up. Glory Hunter, so I am. Dub and Din of the Week. There are some really good contenders for this one.
I'm lying down, Jeff. How about you?
Din of the Week. there were so many different parts of Pompey I could go for din of the week. It's been one of those weeks where there are so many different aspects of Pompey that could have won din of the week. But in what has been a horrid week for Pompey, I'm actually going to try and steer away from that and give us something all we can just have a simple chuckle at. On that basis, din of the week is going to Matt Letizia.
Yes.
Matt the Tin Hat. It just, everyone's seen it. He's one of these great conspiracy theorists, tinfoil, whatever. He was entertaining at first with how in the sand he was and how fried his brain was. It's now getting dangerous. He did essentially imply that some of the war crimes Russia are committing in Ukraine are fake, which essentially got him beyond the pale of just being a madman. No one debated it anymore. He then stepped away from his ambassadorial role at that lot down the road, then saying he'd been cancelled. You're the one that walked away. You voluntarily cancelled yourself, if anything. So yeah, Matt Letizia gets a deserved din of the week. Obviously, topped off yesterday by them losing 6-0. Not quite 9. Well done, Mason Mount, for getting a couple as well.
He's from Portsmouth.
Do you know what he is from Portsmouth? Portsmouth-born Mason Mount had a bit of a good one.
No one's ever mentioned it before.
But there were honourable contenders for din of the week that goes to a very small minority of the fans. And I do mean a very small minority of the fans at Cheltenham. There were pockets of fans trying to start arguments, trying to start fights, this, that, and the other. Regardless of your opinion on Pompey, you should really be trying to start fights among your own people. Pompey themselves for just delivering another great playoff run. Individual players there were good nominations for, but yeah, Matt Letizia for me. I think if we can all just unite behind laughing at a scummer, that lightens up everyone's evening a little bit. Dub of the week has to go to Jake Smith.
Hey, do you know what? I'm just going to invite him on because I think we should invite him on.
Going to preface the story first because I want to embarrass him a little bit. So Jake Smith announced earlier this week that he is to become a father with his partner. And the story surrounding this is why he gets double a week, not just because he is becoming a father, but the why of it. As he much publicized in January, he went to his basically boyhood dream city of New York, came back from New York and decided he wanted a child with his partner. Told his partner, sat down one night, I want a child with you. They announced this week she's 12 weeks pregnant. This essentially means that Jake Smith got home from New York, shagged his girlfriend once and got pregnant. I'm sorry to tell you all this, but Jake Pompey Smith, the walking, talking, timid club shop boy who eats KFC for breakfast, lunch and dinner, has the most potent penis in Portsmouth. And I believe Jake is now on.
Jake, I've got a question. Is Madison Square Garden a name for your child, unborn child?
Do you know what? Madison, Brooklyn, be fantastic names, wouldn't they? But no, unfortunately not. I'm not embarrassed by that. I'm actually quite chuffed. I think that's an honourable mention. I'll take that right. A lot worse.
Potent penis. I have no idea what's going on right now.
I did not expect my Sunday evening to go like this, but here you go.
To be fair, I think on the other side, I don't want to talk about your partner's delicates, but she also very capable of rearing a child, considering, again, one take is all it took, and she's now fully pregnant. So I'd say congratulations to her also for being incredibly potent. So the pair of you are essentially the peak performance.
Good story to end a terrible week and season for Pompey. So yeah, congratulations, Jake. I said the same to Ryan when I found out Ryan was going to be a dad, and I'm sure I can speak on behalf of every dad when I say get to sleep.
now.
Right now. All right.
No, I honestly, you're gonna love it, mate. It's the best feeling in the world, and I love it. And I'm sure, Ryan can and Jeff both can echo that. It's honestly, mate, it's amazing. So yeah, congratulations. Genuinely chuffed to bits for you, mate.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's something I'm excited about, but you know, nervously. But that's not a bad thing. That's something that
you nervous, Jake? Never.
No, never.
You're gonna take the baby to the games with you, Jake?
Oh yeah, straight out of the womb, it'll be there. It'll be on the terraces.
I can just fully picture it now. Jake's missus is in labour, but Pompey are 4-0 up.
Yeah.
I'll be there in a minute.
4-0 up. What kind of world do you live in?
4-0 written all over it, isn't it?
Tom's listening, that's why.
Hey. Oh,
okay. I can barely talk to myself, let alone a child.
Look, Jake. Mate, we'll see you soon.
Good to speak to you.
Okay, pal.
Speak to you. See you later.
Cheers, mate. No, well, I didn't mean to kick him off there, but I spoke to him for 3 years every week, and I'm bored of it. Sorry, Jane, love you. but no, fair play to him. That's deserved dub of the week. Probably one of the best ones we've had, I think. We've had some good ones, but that. You also, by the way, you missed a contender for dinner of the week from someone that got dinner of the week not long ago. But apparently, that a song that was being sung.
Oh yes, yeah.
You know, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Westwood once again. This is what I sort of referred to this earlier, where there are several different parts of the club that were contenders.
Yeah. Well, he likes being in the limelight, so give him his limelight for being an absolute knob.
Yeah, but come on, like there's one thing that I go to a lot of away games with Ashley. She follows this club up and down the land. She is one of those. I'll be there on a Tuesday night in Manchester Grotto number 4 type Pompey fans. She dedicates a lot of money, a lot of miles, a lot of hours to following Pompey, and it's just weird to see that sort of thing. I was having a chat with Lynn Warner on Twitter yesterday, where she's been part of the Pompey adventure for literal decades, over half a century she's been doing it, probably one of the most generally respected Pompey fans we have. And yeah, to be singing that sort of thing about our own people, some of our own fans, it's just baffling to imply that, you know, women aren't welcome as part of this football club. Yeah, it's a really poor one.
So Ryan, looking, Jeff, I'll come to you now. Looking ahead, it would just be typical Pompey to now go and beat Rotherham, wouldn't it?
It would, but I can't see it happening. If the Pompey team of yesterday turn up, we're going to get dicked 3-4 again by Rotherham.
Yeah, and then obviously the next one after that is at home. Well, two home games now. Obviously Lincoln as well. The return of that man.
He's gonna score. He's gonna score.
Bloody is. Of course he is. But what's your views, Ryan? Obviously looking ahead to them two games.
My views are that I will be there. And I will sing songs for 90 minutes and I'll try and have a good time.
Are you sure? Because you're a glory hunter.
I am a glory hunter, yeah. But honestly, does anyone care what the final score is? Just try something. I do not care if we beat Rotherham, draw to Rotherham, lose to Rotherham.
Don't try something, look what happened.
I do not care if we beat, draw, or lose to Lincoln. I just want to see us try something. I want to see something be the focus that we can use for in the future. The final result is immaterial to me because we might finish 10th now, boys, if we win this one. No, that does not interest me. Just give me something that I can look at and go, oh, okay, I can see what we tried to do there. I can see how that might have a purpose next season. If we focus on the result Tuesday or Friday, then we're daft. No one cares about the result anymore. Because the season is essentially over. What people care about is getting a leg up on the competition next year. So just give us something to look at.
You know, I care about the results because I've still got my prediction going on. Which spookily enough, I've just checked and, yeah.
Oh, yeah, go on. What's the update, mate?
So Bolton, I had us down as a draw. We drew. Plymouth, I had us down as a loss, we lost. Wickham, I had us down as a loss, we drew. As I said, Bolton, I had us down as a draw, we drew. Cheltenham, I had us down as a win, we lost. Rotherham, I got us down as a loss. So, you know, it's yeah. If we carry on, I think we're on course to get a total of 26 points. That was the 26 points from the Crewe game. That obviously got postponed and replayed. So, yeah, you know, I think I made it 74 points, I think, in total we would have at the end of the season, given the fact that teams in the playoffs are there or thereabouts already. Yeah, we're finishing around about 10th of the season, definitely.
Podcast Network.